I'm James Gwertzman.
I'm Kristen Cox. Welcome to the Art of Live Ops podcast. Hey, James, how's it going?
Good, Kristen. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm ready to talk about Live Ops.
Yeah, it's, we've had a couple of weeks break here, so it's kind of fun to come back into it again. Well, today we have a guest who may well be the record for the longest running game we've ever talked about Live Ops with. His name is Wouter, and I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, but he has a ton of experience operating communities.
I'm Wouter. I work at GamePoint, and I'm currently the Live Ops manager there. GamePoint is a company that exists for over 20 years, and our flagship game is GamePoint Bingo, which has been around for more than 15 years. So in regards to that, for Live Ops means that we have to build on an existing product instead of something completely new. And that's a challenge that not that many companies have, which makes it really interesting to go with what you have and what you can do.
And while he's doing more of a Live Ops focus now, as you'll hear him talk about, I think we're going to have a lot of really good discussion today around what it takes to actually operate a live community and interact, you know, with players at a very deep level, way deeper probably than most games think about. But I think there's some real payoffs when you can go that deep. And so we'll have a good chat about that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I was recently actually on a panel with him at Pocket Gamer Connect talking about live events, and he had some really fascinating insights.
Very cool. All right, well, let's get to it then.
It's a relatively new rule. We started about 2 years ago now, but the essence of Live Ops was already there through the community, through the community events that we did for ages and ages. So it's an expansion on that, and that's why we also work really, really tight together with marketing, together with the game development team, and together with the community team.
So there may be a new record, though, I have to say. I mean, we've talked to a lot of people operating games for a long time, but 15 years of operating essentially the same game, maybe with different teams, is I think, a new record for us.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it also brings you extremely loyal players. And that's a challenge in itself, because as we all know, change is scary. So every single time you take something away from their favorite game, or you add something that's new, or you change a button, they might be up in arms saying, hey, leave my game alone.
Yeah.
But the moment that people say, leave my game alone, that's when you know that you got real users. Because somebody who doesn't care will move on to the next product. And somebody who voiced their opinion for a button color won't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you hinted at it a little bit there, but it would be interesting to hear you just talk about what led you guys to sort of creating a more formalized Live Ops team, and how your sort of approach to Live Ops has shifted in the last several years.
With one incredible, powerful word, data. Yes, in the past we used metrics, and still we use them today. However, at some point we said, like, okay, it should be the community team executes an event and looks at certain metrics, but that's not enough. And we need to have more ways to measure metrics. So that's when we got the BI team. And then it was, well, somebody needs to actively look at those numbers. And we can't expect the community team to carry all that weight. So let's move somebody from the community team. That was me. I was part of that. Let's move somebody who has quite a lot of experience, knows how the business works, and let's formalize it. So I got another team member who was brand new. So we have a combination between somebody who's been there for 8 years versus somebody who's now in his second year. Which is a really nice dynamic, because I am blind to certain things. I'm biased with certain things, and that other person still has his, has a more less biased view and has an honest opinion, and that works wonders.
So let's talk about community. So before it was called the community team, what were the roles before? It sounds like you did some live events. It sounds like you obviously managed relationships with your fans. I'd love to hear more about sort of what was the role before, and now how we broadened it.
Well, first of all, the one thing we have, which is amazing, is that we have a real-time in-game chat in seven languages. So the community team was there, or is still there, because they're still around. They're there to actively engage with players, be it through video, like Q&A sessions, or just playing games with players online, through being actively in chat when we have an event and saying like, hi, I'm here, have fun, ask me all your questions, let me turn on this setting for you, let me turn on that setting for you, just engaging with players. And if you do that year after year after year, players will recognize you and players will respect you. And yeah, not everybody always behaves. So if somebody is stepping out of line, you can use that respect saying like, ah, oh, come on, man, I'm asking you nicely. Would you please cut it out? Which means that you resolve an issue without banning somebody, because banning is the easy way. That's harmful for the player, harmful experience for the rest, harmful for your company because you have one less player online. And if you can resolve it without issue or being a diplomat, then that's way nicer and way more fun to do. So that's a part of the community team running the events itself, communication for it, requesting design, implementing design. That's all part of the community team. So it's fairly broad. And that is also is on purpose, because we think that if you are in-game 8 hours a day, and just dealing with questions or dealing with people being difficult at times, if that's your day job for 40 hours a week, that's not optimal. That is really not optimal. So if you combine that with executing events, doing work in the evening to be present when the players are present, and you mix all those things up, you have a way more varied job, which makes your job more fun. And the next thing, which is awesome, is you never know what you're going to get, because not a single day is the 8 years that I've been there, not a single day has been exactly the same.
Yeah.
You're hitting on something that I think is starting to become a real question in the industry, which is how much should we expect, you know, certain members of our development and operations teams to deal with the emotionally difficult parts of the job, right? You said like dealing with people who are, you know, breaking social norms. They're going over, they're stepping over the line. They're doing things that are difficult and harmful. I think it's just something that we're starting to ask, because you might come across situations like yours where you have a formalized community team, but a lot of really small teams are just kind of sharing that labor. And so I'm curious to hear your thoughts just about in general, where the industry is at with that question, because I think you have a sort of fresh perspective on it.
Nice. I think automation goes a long, long way. We have a system in place that recognizes words that we deem unhealthy. Let's keep it nice and simple. Unhealthy, and that system automatically picks up. And if a person uses too many of those words, they will get a formal warning with a message in the screen saying, "These are the words that you use that we do not appreciate. Please stop it." And that escalates and escalates. So if you keep using them, you get a second warning, and at some time you get a ban. You're welcome to come back after, let's say, 15 minutes. But if you keep escalating, it will become more and more and more. And that took away quite a lot of our work. And as a bonus, what we see is that people don't know what the norm is or what your game's norm is. So if you actually show them like, hey, this is behavior we don't want, they're like, oh, I didn't realize this was unacceptable. You know what? I will not do it again. And that sounds a little naive, but the system, the statistics said that the most people stop after their first warning. And I'm talking about 70% or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know, Kristen, you've talked a lot in the past about how communities do form norms. And one of the most important things is being really clear what those guardrails are, because the community will generally fall in line if you're being explicitly and actually managing it actively versus just letting it evolve.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, those are really sort of healthy ways to look at it, to say, you know, you set those norms, right? Like you have to be the one to tell them. They don't know. They can't guess, you know, what they should and shouldn't do. I am curious, though, because I think that we're starting to see more and more communities exist outside controlled spaces. And I don't know how much you guys see that, because you do have the in-game chat. So probably a lot of talk really happens in the game, which is a good thing for you guys. But do you also sort of try to manage outside of the game? Do you try to manage, you know, your Facebook community or your Discord community or anything like that?
We have several Facebook pages and we have several Facebook groups that we manage ourselves. There we apply basically the same rules as we apply in-game. Outside of those groups, which are not owned by us, mm-hmm. there's not much we can do, because where do you draw the line? We basically say, if something happens there that is inappropriate, go tell Facebook and Facebook will deal with it, because it happens on their platform. I cannot... this happens, is that people argue over the internet in your chat about something what happens on WhatsApp. There's no way for us to intervene or to say to WhatsApp, like, could you not connect those two people? So we choose to say, okay, it's on our platform. And that's where we basically draw the line, except for the Facebook groups that we manage ourselves. Yes. But those Facebook groups are a little less formal, because they're on invite only. And the tone of voice is there way less informal. We can post GIFs there and stuff. And on our formal Facebook page, we tend to use our own design, our own messaging. Basically we say, if it happens on Game Point and it affects other users, like people having a domestic argument in a chat with 200 other people, we say, come on, there's 200 people potentially watching this. This is not the way to go. Please do this somewhere else, or preferably privately in your own house. But then again, people feel comfortable enough to have that argument on our platform. So there is always two sides to the coin. That's also a part of the moderation, is don't take everything literally and everything hostile, because half of it is in jokes, especially with a community that's as old as ours. People have met offline, people organized events, we attended events, and then you get small in crowds. Don't take everything they say too personally. If I reprimand somebody and somebody else says, you're not a nice person, I need to let that slide. I cannot say, you're going off the platform as well because you criticize my judgment. I'd rather talk it out and then explain my point of view. But if you don't have a little bit of thick skin, like insulting and doxing and stuff, that's totally unacceptable. And that's across the board, all games, all mediums. Luckily, that doesn't have... I haven't had it happen to any of my coworkers in the last 8 years. So that's pretty nice. But you cannot... If it's a small offense, if somebody says, I don't like what you're doing, just ignore it. Because otherwise you will be busy cleaning up you will be busy cleaning up your entire platform the entire day, and people need something to talk about and something to do. And your role as community manager, or as in my case now, LiveOps manager, if you do events, there will be criticism. Accept that and learn from that. Don't shut those people up just because they voice their opinion. Sometimes in a less polite way, maybe, but don't. Yeah. And on a business side of things, you don't want to remove a person from the chat or from the game that you fought really hard for monetization-wise or UA-wise to get in there. And one of the key, that's also one of the reasons why we included those warnings. If you have a new player you just did UA on and it costs you, I'm just dropping a number here, but it costs you $10 to get that person into your game, and he says one word that you're not happy with, and you show them a ban or a warning, that's $10 gone. Better to educate them and say, we don't really appreciate this, but go try again and see how you fare.
I'm actually very interested in the effect. You just mentioned you have these in-groups, these kind of cliques of old players. Do you ever find that these cliques of old players are sort of unwelcoming to new players and actually sort of prevent, you know, new players coming in and feeling they're unwelcome? Or do you actually, have you created a culture where the new, old players are actually welcoming the new players and actively sort of helping them on board and find a happy home?
It's a combination of both. Yes, there's in-crowd, but what we have, so we have one general chat. The language chat, everybody's on the platform is in there. But we have rooms for the bingo where there are up to 100 people in there. And what you will find is that people that click together go into the same room. Mm. So it might be that they're not all welcoming. Well, I'm sure not everybody's welcoming, but it's no different than real life. But they can go somewhere else or find something else where they're more welcoming. And we also fairly recently introduced a clan system. Mm-hmm. And with that clan system, they can really go in game and connect deeper and have their own private chat. So there are multiple ways to chat, multiple ways to connect with each other. And that in general, new people should feel welcome. And I'm fairly sure that new people feel welcome because we're also in game to help new players and to welcome new players.
Mm-hmm. So I think I think we're going to keep talking about this community because it's just fascinating. It's such an old community, right? It's just been around for so long. A lot of games that are really community focused tend to be complicated, right? They have a lot of stuff going on with them, or they're 3D, or, you know, there's a ton of progression loops, but your game is really very simple. And so I think it's in some ways a very pure example of what it means to sort of build community. And I'd love to hear you talk about what you guys were doing, especially early on, before, you know, I think, a lot of other, companies really got focused on live ops and before you were so focused on data, to build this community around a game that is very pure and has such a broad appeal. It's such a large swath of people who could be interested in it.
Yes. So, well, I'm fairly sure we can say that Bingo, the game itself, offline as well, has stood the test of time. I think maybe Chess and Go are older, but not that many games are older than this. Yeah. So that's also the simplicity of it. You already know what it is. You already know how it works. And you already know what to expect. So in that sense, it's really welcoming. And what we try to do and what we're pretty good at is connecting people. Like I said, we have that chat that connects people. There are people getting married. There are people getting babies. I have had the luxury and the honor of being present at two weddings from players.
Wow, yeah.
And I can tell you it feels really special to be there with family members and friends, and that they value our community or our company as much that they invite you to a wedding. I don't see it happening with a bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways, you're a social media platform, right? Like, because I mean, really... The people are coming together because they, I assume, find shared interests. They're talking. They're meeting each other in a way they never would in real life.
Yeah, it feels that the game is the excuse to get together. I mean, Bingo has historically been a game that is more of an excuse for social experiences than just the game itself.
True. So that's the first part, what I said about it's a simple game and you connect people, but it's also the hard work of my current colleagues, but my previous colleagues as well, just to engage with them. And it's so simple to be there in the chat. I had a situation recently where something went wrong with a player and it had to do with live ops. So we made a mistake for that player. Player was really unhappy, voiced her opinion about it. And try as we might, we did our best with support to help her, but she still wasn't... she still wasn't happy. So I said, you know what? I'm going to pick up the phone. It's been a while since I've been at community, but I'm fairly sure that I can still try to make this right for her. So I called her. First, obviously, asked her in the chat, can I call you? Can we talk about this? So she gave her number and we called her. And I just basically said, we are very, very sorry that this has happened. This is a situation. And as you might know, I've been at the support department and the community department before. And she just said, yeah, I remember you. You've been here for ages. And I said, well, that's good to know because you are the first player that I've called in over a year. This is how important it is for me that we fix this for you. Mm-hmm. And that calmed her down a lot. Mm-hmm. Just to hear that we're sorry. We made a boo-boo and we'll fix it for you. And we'll take a time out of our personal time or we make it a personal approach. And sure, you can't do that with 100,000 players at once. But the ones that require this amount of attention, you can make a social bond with them. And I still kind of like the fact that she said, I remember you being here for years.
Yeah.
That means that I did that part of my job really well.
Yeah, that's human connection. I mean, I think I've had some conversations with designers over the years talking about, you know, what is it that people want out of virtual spaces, virtual worlds? And one of those things is to feel like that place, that game, that community is something that people care about, something that a human being has made for you or is there to create an experience for you that's got a human touch in it.
Yeah. Yes, that's certainly true. I touched upon this previously when we were at the panel, is that we have a player day. So once a year, we open our doors for players that want to visit us or wants to come say hi. Mm-hmm. We put up a day full of events with different departments because we feel that the bingo team should be there, the design team should be there. Hmm. If people have technical questions, the IT guys should be there. Of course, the community team is there. And what happens was that I was talking to players and one of them said, so I've been on your website for 10 years. And you know what? I actually thought that everything was run by one person in an attic.
Yes, and I love this story.
I said, well, as you can see, we're here with roughly 100 people. It's not exactly an attic. Yeah. So it's slightly bigger than that. And that also helps people understand better what you do as a company. That helps them understand, like, yes, there's mouths to feed. There's 100 people employed here. So sometimes you make a decision that is that takes something away from them that's free, but you replace it with even more if they make a purchase. That happens. There's still plenty of free stuff to get from us. Don't worry about that. But it's never enough. I've had it in the past that people said, like, yeah, well, if you do a giveaway and you give away a microwave, I don't find that interesting, so I'm not participating. And then we're like, yeah, but what's next? You want a house? Do you want a Ferrari? If I give you a Ferrari, you want an entire city or a castle. So it's never enough. And that's human nature. And I can't blame them for that. It's never enough, which is good because bingo is also never ending.
Yeah. I would love to get back to the live events if we haven't, because I'm always interested in event design and the ways in which games change themselves to accommodate, you know, keep it fresh and keep it going. And so maybe can you share some examples of the kinds of events you run or maybe some of the most successful events you've hosted?
Yes. So in December, we started with something that we called the Candy Road. It's a progression layer on top of the bingo. Basically, if you play, you do not have to win exactly. If you play, you will receive candy points. Candy points unlock prizes, and you go down the candy road. Fairly simple progressive mechanic. Are we the first to do it? Certainly not. But was it needed for our game? Yes, because as you can imagine, if you've been playing bingo for 10 years, it can get stale. And this was a way to make it non-invasive for the existing gameplay, because you really don't want to miss with somebody's bingo.
And what kind of participation do you get? And is it like pretty much everyone who's actively playing is going to participate in all of your events?
Yes and no. We segment a little bit. What we do is we have, so not everybody has the same engagement as not everybody has the same engagement. We have people that spend 10 minutes with us a day. We have people that spend, I don't know, 4 hours with us in a day.
Right.
If you give them the same goals and achievements and rewards, that just doesn't work. But also event-wise themselves, sometimes the players that play a lot do high stakes we tell them, here's a special room for you with a special reward. It will be less busy because not everybody has the amount of coins that you have. And we get, so you get a special goal, collect X amount of items. And then if you collect them all, you get a special reward, be it digital, usually digital, by the way. And, but you also get quality time with us. So we have the event running for 4 hours and we're in there and we're dump your questions on us.
Yeah, so it's like a high stakes high roller room, you know.
Yes.
Like
Problem is that let's say the other 80% of the people who do not have it will tell you like it's unfair. It's only for the people with who can afford high stakes. And they will say yes, but did you know that last week we had an event that was in every room where everybody could participate, where everybody got a little prize at the end of the event. So that's what we try to do. People tend to forget that they have that as soon as there's a new event. So you just need to remind them suddenly like, hey, listen, this is the event that we did the last couple of weeks. And as you can see, we try to cater to everyone. This event might not be for you this time, but we will do something else. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. And that approach we've been doing for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. And they accepted it. If you tell people, this is not for you for today, but tomorrow we have something that is for you, they're highly acceptance of it.
Yeah. So you mentioned Candy Road is built, was designed to be a progression layer on top of your existing gameplay without changing the gameplay. Are there examples of live events you've done where you have changed the gameplay or have, as you said, messed with their bingo for some limited time period?
Yeah, and that's also instantly a Phil, Phil question. So we have an event called Bingo Millionaire. What it is normally when a round starts, you have 30 seconds to buy your cards. Mm-hmm. And then the game starts. With a Bingo Millionaire, the round lasts, the buy time lasts 7 to 8 days. So you have 7 to 8 days to get your cards. We fill up the pot with at least 1 million coins. And the rest that gets to the pot is added by the amount of cards that you get. We give away free cards. So the thing is, what you're messing with the bingo round is people expect the round to start in 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. But it's a week. So you need to tell them, like, it's a week. Please be patient. Come back. Get people to get back. All of those people that are joining, normally a room has 100 people in them. Well, this is slightly more. We have 8,000 to 9,000 people in when the round starts. So we had language issues because we had 9,000 people talking together in the same room. We fixed all that. So that's kind of messing with their bingo. And so what happened the last time with the Bingo Millionaire is that somebody changed the setting, which should have been caught, which we didn't. And the ball speed was 10 seconds. So every 10 seconds, a ball drops by, which means your round lasts 8 to 9 minutes. Somebody added a zero to that. So that's 100 seconds per ball. That round lasted for 90 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And we couldn't stop it.
People are just sitting there like, waiting for the ball to drop.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, so the first ball drops and we usually delay the first ball because it's a special event and it just runs for once this week. So you need to hype it a little bit. And then the second ball came and we're like, this is taking a while. So I went looking into the settings like, oh, I figured out what went wrong here. But we cannot stop it because if we update this, it will start the next round and not this current round. So that was 90 minutes. So what happened was we were already there with the community team in game and we just had fun with them for 90 minutes.
Yeah,
this wasn't our ideal evening either, but we can spend time with you. And well, did you know that an average session is 65 balls? So if you want to make a cup of coffee, I'm fairly sure you're not missing anything.
Out of curiosity, did you guys tell everyone it was a mistake or did you actually kind of own it and say, hey, we're doing something special tonight.
No, we own it, said it was a mistake. Yeah, okay. Some people asked for refunds and we said, well, the round is still running. So no. You don't have to be here. It's an automatic round, so it will be played for you.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask that question, which is, do you make people, you know, check off their own bingo cards, or is it purely deterministic?
this was fully automatic because, yeah, people need to wait a week. Not everybody can make it. Right. We also we have an automatic and manual mode in the game anyway, so people know what to expect. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was 90 minutes. We had a lot of fun. In the beginning, people were a little bit grumpy, as to be expected. Yeah. But we turned it around and we just had quizzes in there and ask people what the next ball would be because they had 90 seconds to decide. Just own it.
That's a great live ops disaster, honestly. We usually ask at the end of the episode, share a time when something went wrong. That's a fantastic one because I love that you guys turned it around and sort of made it an event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we made an event. And now we're internally in talks like, can we do a slow motion bingo?
Yeah.
so that we... It's not hashed out in any way, shape, or form. It's just an idea. As in, what if we make it around 45 minutes? But what if we tell them up front, this is your 45 minutes? And what if we combine it with a Q&A that lasts as long as the round? And tell them up front, like, you have 45 minutes to ask your questions and you have a chance to win a bingo. Are we actually ever going to do it? I have no clue. But I like that that came out of this. Well, disaster is a big word, but this is what happened. I have a few more of those life of disasters, but we'll get to that at the end. Because I like those. I like that section the best. You know what? Because you have to build, in order to build something, you need a lot of people, but you just have one person to make sure that something fails.
The more complicated the system, the easier it is for someone to put a zero in the wrong place, right?
Yeah. Well, we learn from it also in a way to make sure that you, we learn from the more eyes on the ball and or automated and stuff like that. But I love our agility. I love the fact that all of our community managers who were in there said, well, this used to be 15 minutes of my Saturday night, but it's going to be an hour and a half and we're going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, I think that's the aspect of live ops. It's like improv theater where you're always on your feet. And anytime you're dealing live with customers, anything can happen. So you've got to have people who can roll with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of our strong points.
Yeah. You talked a little bit before about segmenting your events. And I love the fact that you are just sort of upfront with players about some players are getting this and, some players are getting you'll have something tomorrow. But I'm wondering if that was something that evolved out of data for you. Did you start doing segmentation after you started looking more closely at data, or was it something you guys were always doing?
It was a combination. So when we did the first High Rollers events, we saw that a lot of people were drawn to it, saw that it was not for them, and just leave the event. And we got verbal feedback saying, hey, I don't agree with this. So we said, okay, let's track more. What happens if we target specific users, only show this information to specific users, see if there's maybe less people in there, but they do more. They're more engaged.
Right.
They move the economy more. Because I can have, 500 people in a room, and if only five players are playing in there, that's not... Yeah, you can say, ooh, there was 500 people attending, but if there's only five people, it doesn't work. So it was a mishmash. At some point, we got more tools to track how many people are engaged and how much do they do. And it proved to us that if you do events for specific users and give them a lot of attention, they will do good. They are engaged and they hit the metrics that you want them to hit. And then you get more tools because you're proving your concept and everybody's happy.
It's like true iteration.
Yeah, true iteration. And nearly everything we do is iterated because we do everything in-house. So that's a huge plus. That means that there's short lines. I can walk up to any department and say, hey, I'm thinking about X and Y. Can we do this? Yes, no. It also means that I cannot have a perfect product within, 4 weeks, which is completely the first, is completely the version that I want. No, I need to iterate stuff. I need to say, okay, this is the bare minimum I need. Mm-hmm. And then I can tweak some settings and I can work with that. And then I'll get back to you with new info and we'll collectively say, this works, this doesn't work. And that's how you get your tooling. And everybody will agree here is that you will never have enough tools. Yeah. Or they will not be so good true. Enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
So true.
Before we leave the topic of community, I realize there's one question I didn't have a chance to ask, which is, you just mentioned that the people in your community recognized you as having been there for many years. That tells me that you have a name. You actually chose to identify yourself as a individual human. And I think in some games, the community members are identified. In others, there's sort of this anonymous moderator. And obviously, you guys made a choice to be, you know, identified as personalities, as individuals. Maybe talk to us a little bit more about that choice.
So for employees, it's basically use your own name. Mm-hmm. If you really, really, really don't want to, if you're a developer or something and you don't interact with players that much, you can have a nickname or something like that. Some older people that have been there for 10, 15 years also have a handle, and people actually recognize them by their handle. So it's, again, a lot of just being there in game. For me personally, I just chose, like, they're going to find out anyway. As soon as I pick up the phone, what I'm going to say, Game Point, good afternoon. This is Cerberus or something like that. No, just my first name. If I ever meet them offline, it's way easier. It's basically my name. And as a little in-joke, my name rhymes with leprechaun in Dutch. Okay. So my avatar for years has been a leprechaun, either in snow, either in the sun, either in leaves, or either in grass in spring. So for years, my avatar rotated between the seasons. And that's something people also recognize you by.
Do you think that that's... do you think that that is sort of universally the right way to go? Or have you had experiences with your community where, you know, you've been like, wow, it maybe would have been beneficial for this person not to be so personally out there?
That is really difficult. We have a closed platform that helps, as in you need to register and you need to be there. Right. I could imagine if you are on Reddit and you're a moderator, it's less favorable to do this. Or on Twitter, or what is way, way more open, where other people who are not in your industry, who are not part of your community, can actively engage with you. That might be different. But for our situation, how it works, like I said, 8-9 years, never had an incident. It shows a part of humanity. It shows a face to the company. We are also doing live videos more and more. For us, it's just use your name, be who you want to be. That helps the best. That works the best for us. Because it's also our target demographic who says, which is majority women over 40 to basically 90. They, with the Western culture, etc., they have something like be yourself, don't be somebody else. They didn't grow up with nicknames. They didn't grow up with handles. They didn't grow up with the internet and amenity. So for them, it's also, be genuine, be yourself. Otherwise, I'm talking to a bot or a person that built this company in his attic.
Yeah. It's that authenticity. But you know, I will say, very commendable of you guys, because it takes so much patience. Right. Like being out there, and you've talked about it several times during this conversation of diplomat, you know, being a diplomat, de-escalating, talking people through it. That takes a ton of patience. So it's real work.
It does. It is real work, but it also comes easier over the year because you build up a certain reputation or build up respect, so to say. So if I walk into a room and somebody is misbehaving, they know how I am going to react. Some of them might test me, but especially in the first 2 months were proving grounds. Yeah. You just go into the chat, talk to 100 different people and see how you fare. And in the beginning, they will test you, and any platform will do that. But if you get through those first few months and you show integrity and you show that you have consistency in your behavior, they will respect that. And then people will stop misbehaving in front of you. Or they will refer you to somebody else. And I've had people defending me. Somebody was something along the lines that, Derry is, he's the one always banning people. And of course you get that as a moderator, as an employee, you get that. But then people respond with, oh, no, I had a problem and he helped me perfectly. So, those kind of interactions, those are super important, and it makes your life way, way easier if you build that trust. And I'm guessing that people that are in MMOs will recognize this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would love to talk a little bit about your training process. When you hire new community members, how do you train them? What's your onboarding process? Do you throw them into the wild in the deep end, or do you sort of, you know, give them training first, or are they you know, mentored? Like, what is your process?
They get a 3-week course, which basically explains this is game point. This is this department, that department. This is how we do. This is the tools that we use. This is our code of conduct. And go in there and we'll protect you. We got your back. Mm-hmm. If you got a phone call, we'll be there next to you listening in and give you pointers and tips. And people, the thing is, like I said, not every day, no day is the same. So I can prep you with all the knowledge that I have. And I can give you 100 scenarios on how to deal with them. The moment I let you go online, you will experience situation 101, which I didn't explain to you.
Yeah. Right.
That's where the mentoring comes in, and that's where the teaching comes in. And it's a long time thing. It's you cannot also not expect the community to fully embrace somebody after a week. That takes time. Yeah. And that's why you need to duo it and go with two people in game and let somebody else who never done it before do a Q&A session and then whisper the answers into their ear. You need to get used to it. And that's one of the things I miss most about LiveLove. I'm not as much in game anymore as I used to be. Yes, I get to focus way more on the numbers and I can do more for the people in broader groups. So for the entire community, it's way more effective and we're delivering better products and better events. We are more data driven, so people get more experience that they should get. But sometimes I miss those little interactions. And that's why such an evening as with the Bingo Millionaire, which took 90 minutes, was like, yeah, let's do this. I got 90 minutes to talk to you guys.
Nice.
Because it's timely, you know, we're recording this in the middle of the COVID pandemic, and I'm assuming, you know, you were probably under some of the same work from home restrictions that everyone else has been. Did that have a big impact on your live ops, having your team all working from home, or were you able to just roll with it?
Partly roll with it, and we already did some working from home. Not everybody was always in the office. We try to be, but yeah, people have days off or work half a days. So we already are fully integrated with Slack and those kinds of things. So that helps a lot. If you have a program like Slack or Teams or what was the previous one? Something along those lines you can digitally communicate with each other. That helps so much. Phone calls. The thing is that we're fairly autonomous. If the product is in the live build, we can tweak it and we can work with it. So we can do pretty much everything on our own. It had its challenges. And thankfully, the office has opened up already. And slowly but surely, people are coming in. Of course, with all the regulations and all the safety issues, precautions set there. So yes, face-to-face still works the best. Or in this case, face 1.5 meters face, still works the best. But yeah, it's doable.
Yeah. Cool. Well, shall we move?
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was like, yeah, we're just about ready to wrap up. You gave us a pretty good story, but you said you had lots of them. So we're going to ask you for your sort of definitive live ops disaster.
Can I have two examples?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes. Okay. So, not this company, previous game company that I worked at. Korean MMO, servers in Korea, South Korea. Servers in South Korea. And I was one of the first time I was updating the server and for an event. And it was by remote login. So I had a remote connection with that machine that was sitting there. coworker explained exactly what I needed to do. It was doing its thing. It was updating, and I was slightly bored. And so I start poking around in that remote system. And I was like, what is actually the connection speed of this thing? So I went down at the bottom right on the connection settings. And instead of hitting properties, I moved my mouse and I hit disconnect.
Oh, no.
So during live update, I have no connection to my machine over there in Korea. So I slightly panicked. And this is years and years and years ago. So I went to my coworker saying, I might have made a tiny mistake. This is what happens. Oh, so what are we going to do? Well, I'm going to call somebody in Korea in the middle of the night to physically go to the storage space where we have that machine. And he had to actually reboot it, just physically reboot it so we get the connection back. So we needed to call somebody. Oh, man, it was so horrible. I still feel guilty that I need to call somebody out of bed. I don't know, 4 a.m. Yeah. Of course, that thing is not in the middle of the city. Oh, it was a disaster. And on top of that, I need to apologize to the community. So I need to make... I think the title was something along the lines, I pressed the wrong button.
Yeah.
So that's also owning it.
Yeah.
It happens. It happens. But wow, yeah, that's rough.
That's tough.
So... that learned me to be less curious on foreign machines.
Live machines, yeah.
At least live machines. Yeah,
live machines. Maybe that's number one. And the second one is also related to the Being a Millionaire, what I said earlier. So what happens is with our system, everybody who buys a card chips in coins and part of those coins go to the pot. So that's a session that's created. And that session normally automatically closes as soon as the round is over. It takes a couple of seconds. And that's how it works for all games. But sometimes there is one or two games that do not close off properly. And we manually check those, like, hey, what happened here? How can we prevent this? And that's part of the community team to do that in the morning. Every morning we checked, and evening and morning we checked, like, hey, are there sessions that didn't close off right? So we have to Being a Millionaire. As I told you before, it's 7 or 8 days of an open session. Mm-hmm. And we sent out warnings like, do not close this and everything else. And it was early morning and I was awake and I was like, I'm going to do my duty for today. I'm going to do those sessions. So I hit on reprocess and I was like, wasn't there a session that shouldn't be reprocessed? Oh no. So then I had to do the walk of shame on WhatsApp saying like, listen, I broke our session with 4 days to go. Which means that everybody, at least everybody got their cards back, but everybody had to rebuy everything.
Oh,
we needed
no.
to communicate to people like, hey, listen, sorry this happened. That was a good one. Thankfully, mistakes are allowed, so I didn't get reprimanded.
Thank you so much for doing this. This was great.
Yeah, thank you for the invite. I loved it.
This was really fun. This is you really have set a record for one of the longest running games we've talked about on the show. So that's really fun.
And the downside is we haven't even covered everything yet.
I can imagine we could probably talk for just like 8 hours and still hear stories about stuff that you guys have been through. But this has been really, thank you so much for doing it.
Mm-hmm. No problem whatsoever.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Live Ops podcast. If you liked what you heard, remember to rate, review, and subscribe so others can find us.
And visit playfab.com for more information on solutions for all your Live Ops needs.
Thanks for tuning in.